Radio Influence. The future is now.
Introducing the world's heavyweight champion, the Crusher!
Listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 10-12-60 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. I am Jeff Crushell. The Con Man is here, and we're your weekly source for performance information. It has been a gigantic week. Corruption in sport, the NHL season is getting underway, MLB playoffs, NBA camps, sports and politics. To kneel or not to kneel is the question. So much going on, and today we're going to look at the number one performance factor in all of sport, sleep. We'll be joined by Sherry Ma. Sherry Ma is a clinical and transitional research fellow at the University of California in San Francisco at the Human Performance Center and School of Medicine there. You can follow Sherry on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Sherry_Ma. And she also has an email you can reach her at if you have questions. It's SherryMa@StanfordAlumni.org. It's a really big show today, as again, sleep is our number one performance priority. But before we go there, I want to go back to the corruption in sport topic, because this is really big. You know, this four major colleges now under investigation. Look, there will be jail time here. The FBI is involved in this. Investigation started way back in 2015. They knew something was going on, and now we're just getting to the bottom of it. We're talking payoffs, corruption, collusion. Adidas on the periphery is involved, and this is centered around college sport. But going back in our archives, you know, we've been very, very aware of the corruption issue inside of sport for quite some time. The integrity of sport is as important to us as the doping side. I guess the moral and ethics of the individual athletes who decide to go and cheat in the landscape that is around that dark side of sport. But when we compromise the true integrity of sport by match fixing, collusion, controlling players, athletes, coaches, and officials, boy, oh boy, nothing hurts sport more than compromising the integrity of the sport through corruption, match fixing, and the collusion that we've seen at the highest levels of some of the most powerful organizations in the world. So I just posted a blog on our website, crushperformance.com. Go check it out. It's called Corruption in College Sports. And it just outlines our background and our investigations into this very, very important topic. And it links us back to two really powerful conversations that we've had in the past. One regarding the match-fixing scandals in professional soccer with Declan Hill, an investigative reporter who wrote a great book called The Fix. It goes and talks about his investigation into match-fixing, how it's done and how deep it really runs. Deep and how high up it goes in the hierarchy of professional soccer. It's all-powerful, it's alarming, and truthfully, Declan put his life in danger to get this information. It's very, very worthy of a listen for you, your family, your young athletes, just to raise awareness of what's really going on behind the scenes, because trust me, collusion and corruption in sports will happen, has been happening, and will always happen as long as there's big money involved. As a matter of fact, in one of our conversations with Declan, he talks about international soccer playoff. I think it was 10, 11, 12-year-olds. It was U14 for certain. And there was up to, I think, $9 million bet on the outcome of this match of youth soccer. That's how crazy it is. But anytime there's sport, there's going to be corruption. I guess the question would be, how much corruption is there and what type of corruption is going on inside of sport? And if it is happening, How far down does it really go, or how far up? Could it reach the very top of professional sports? And who's masterminding the whole thing? And how the hell are they making it happen? Well, I wanted to know. So I went to one of the most successful mafia bosses in history, former mob boss, Michael Franzese, to ask him how he ran his organization and what the mob and organized crime does to get their fingers and tentacles into sport, amateur sport, professional sport. And boy, it is scary. Again, you can go to our website, crushperformance.com. Check out that blog. The links to both of those discussions are there. It is so real. And listen, once the mafia gets their fingers into you, they don't let go. That's the truth. And it is real. It's very, very real. And to find out how real, just go listen to our conversation with Michael. It's alarming. We're going to try to catch up with Michael in the next few weeks here as the story of the collegiate corruption unfolds. But today we're going to move forward looking at our number one performance priority, sleep. What can you do to get better sleep? How much sleep do you actually need? And truthfully, how much does sleep impact performance? You're going to hear all the numbers as we talk with Sherry Ma later today. And we're also going to look at how Sherry Ma used sleep science to beat the odds. Listen, I'm going to secretly steal Sherry away and we're going to take her to Vegas and we're going to play the line in professional sports because she used a sleep science formula to determine when teams were at a big disadvantage due to their rest and recovery. And the accuracy rates and her predicting which teams would lose were incredibly accurate. In fact, it might be one of the reasons the NBA chose to modify their schedule this year. That's the true power of sleep science. Hey, we're talking about that and much more right after this, everybody. Stick around.
Radio Influence brings you the absolute best in digital audio broadcasting. We've got something for everyone. Sports personalities like the fabulous Sports Babe, Rich Herrera, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy as they take you inside the dugout. We'll take you inside the world of MMA with the MMA Report with Jason Floyd, the MMA Insiders, and the Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxendine. Or you could find yourself sitting ringside with wrestling ring announcer David Penzer. TV law enforcement analyst and former police officer Vincent Hill breaks down this week's biggest crime stories and takes you beyond the badge. Chef Brian Duffy from TV's Bar Rescue shares his crazy life on the road with Duffified Live. And Scott Ledger will always make you think with some dangerous conversation. All of Radio Influence's shows can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome back to the show, everyone. I am Jeff Crushell, and we are your weekly source for performance information. If you want to get in touch with us, do so. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Send us any questions, comments, or smart remarks you might have. Or if you have a topic you'd like us to investigate, let us know. We'll look into it for sure. And if we like it enough, we may dedicate a segment of the show or an entire episode to your idea. So let us know if you have any thoughts on that or if you want us to look into anything. Today, we are looking at one of our top priorities when it comes to developing talent and maximizing human performance. It's our number one performance factor, and it is sleep. And right now, for a limited time, you can get our free ebook on sleep. It's called Key to Performance. You can go to our Facebook page, Crush Performance, or our website, crushperformance.com, to get that free ebook. And understand how important sleep is, what you can do to get better sleep, and how sleep impacts your performance. It's incredible, and it's why it's our number one priority when it comes to performance, well beyond sport too, by the way. Whether we're talking about our athletes and their academics, or whether we're talking our performers who are in music, or our business leaders, or heck, even our parents. Sleep impacts everything you will do. And that's why it's such an important conversation. One of the first things we do when an athlete comes into our programs or when we start consulting with an organization or a team is we review the sleep priorities of the athletes and the organization. There's so many things you can do on a daily basis to make sure this is under control. And make no mistake, if you're not taking care of your sleep, you cannot perform at the top of your ability. It is not possible. You might get away with it for an incredibly short period of time, But that's it. After that, it's downhill. And there's a lot of great research out there that points to this and explains why it happens. And one of the leading researchers in this area of study is Sherry Ma. Sherry is a clinical and transitional research fellow at the University of California in San Francisco at the Human Performance Center in the School of Medicine there. And she joins us right now. Sherry Ma, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this has been a conversation I've been looking for, forward to for quite some time. Sherry, in our programs, in our developmental programs, doesn't matter whether we're working with the little duffers in developmental sport or whether it's our elite world-class athletes, we have a hierarchy of priorities when it comes to our developmental programs. And the top priority is rest and recovery. And inside of that is sleep. And when I initially tell our athletes or organizations that that's our number one priority and this is our mindset moving forward, I kind of get these crazy looks, Sherry. And I just get the feeling still, even today, that people don't quite really understand or appreciate the power of sleep. And of course, that's your expertise. So thanks for joining us again today.
No, I'm glad to be on. Yeah, unfortunately, sleep is one of the first things that sometimes we all sacrifice and overlook, especially when there's a lot on our plate. But it is incredibly important that we have our daily foundational sleep for proper recovery and ultimately performance.
So we say in our programs, look, here's our priorities: sleep, eat, and play. It's great work if you can get it. There's no question about it. But sleep being the number one priority. We've had athletes, you know, who are, you know, in college or working jobs or developmental athletes who are trying to make ends meet. And you're absolutely right. The first thing we hear is, hey, well, I'll just wake up an hour earlier or 2 hours earlier to get my workout in, and then I'll go on my day. And that's just a real, real backwards mindset based on what we know about the sleep and the power of sleep and human performance today. Don't you agree?
I agree. And it's difficult, right? We only have 24 hours in our day and we all are very busy trying to get in everything that we want in that limited amount of time. And then when you're asking athletes to get, you know, well, the minimum that is recommended is 7 hours for every healthy adult. But for a lot of the elite athletes, we really are recommending more in the range of 8 to 10 hours, which is often far from what many of them are getting. But when you're trying to request a third of that day to be spent sleeping, I recognize that that can be very much a challenge. But for the athletes that are really trying to be at the top of their game, we know that this is really necessary. And physiologically, they need that recovery time, as well as cognitively, to be able to perform appropriately and at their best the following day.
Sherry, the power of sleep goes well beyond sport, but when we look at the science and the impact on human performance, there is no place better than professional sports because everything counts. You, of course, are currently a sleep advisor for the Nike Performance Council. You've worked with teams in the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball as well. And that's a really interesting audience to get your hands on because you can really sort of see the impact. But it goes well beyond sport. There's no question about it. What are some of the big mistakes or challenges you're seeing at the professional level of sport, Sherry?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think every sport really has its unique challenges. You know, the NBA schedule is quite different than, say, the NFL schedule, but there's also similarities across sport. I think that just generally speaking, athletes and teams, you know, this is a newer area for many of them that they haven't really dived into as much as potentially other aspects of sports performance. But I think one of the big challenges is the day-to-day schedule as when they're at home as well as when they're traveling. And then some of the ways in which they prioritize how they look at sleep and recovery over a season. And then there's, you know, kind of the lifestyle behavior modifications that is difficult as well. You know, when you have alcohol and caffeine, either pre or post game, you have other lifestyle variables. There's the vet potentially with kids. And then you throw in circadian disruption with a lot of travel and crossing these time zones. And all of that kind of lends to this perfect storm that makes it often difficult for athletes to get good quality sleep as well as adequate duration. Like both of those are both critical components.
Yeah, and that's interesting. We're talking with Sherry Ma. Sherry is a clinical and transitional research fellow at the University of California in San Francisco. Sherry's work looks at the impact of sleep on cognitive and physical performance across a wide range of sports. And of course, beyond sport, we know that it impacts every part of our lives, Sherry.
Hey, let's go back to really sort of maybe explaining to our audience the value of sleep. And I think one of the great examples of this, Sherry, was the unbelievable work you guys did over at Stanford with the sleep extension studies. You know, when I was back with the Blue Jays, I really did recognize the impact of crossing those time zones on performance. And, you know, I looked at things like having the team invest in personalized pillows for the guys. And I was talking about, you know, sort of the bed top covers, those feather covers, so the guys would have at least some kind of consistent feel on the beds from hotel to hotel. So we were looking at those things. But I'm telling you what, you guys really, really opened my eyes to the power of sleep when you released the information on the sleep extension studies. What a fantastic experiment that must have been to be part of.
Thanks. Yeah, that was actually some of our first work, just really exploring kind of the second half of the story, right? A lot of the literature has focused on the detrimental effects of when we chronically don't get enough sleep, and then we build up what we call an accumulated sleep debt, right? And I was really fascinated as well, how can we pay back that sleep debt? What is the length that's going to take, and how much extra sleep do you need to get to really make a big dent and bring that down to a more manageable level? Because that was what we were anticipating would be where athletes really would be performing at their best. And had an awesome opportunity to work with phenomenal collegiate athletes at Stanford. So worked with the men's basketball team, and we really tried to push them to extend their sleep, really trying to set them on a regular sleep schedule, bring down that sleep debt over a number of weeks, and monitor specific outcomes. So for them, we did look at reaction time. We looked at sport-specific measures. So we looked at free throws and three-point shots and agility sprint. We looked at mood levels, so fatigue and vigor levels. And over the course of a number of weeks, we did see some surprising findings that I did not anticipate. We would see a 9% increase in both free and three-point percentages. They started to run faster sprints, and we did see improvements in their fatigue levels. And that was just really sort of when the light bulb went off in my head to say that, you know, there may be a way that we can enhance daytime functioning and ultimately performance if we're really focused in on how these athletes are in terms of their day-to-day recovery and sleep, both, again, the quality and the quantity.
Sherry, such powerful numbers. The increases you saw in those athletes is remarkable. Those are elite athletes. And, you know, we were looking at the data when I first saw it, and I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I believe they were averaging 6 to 7 hours of sleep, and the extension study required them to be in bed for 10 plus hours for 5 to 6 weeks. I believe that's how it went down. And the impact, of course, was incredible. So just fascinating, I guess, data that really highlighted the value of sleep in terms of human performance.
Exactly. Right. And there is a difference between objectively how much you're sleeping and then subjectively how much they thought they were getting. We did this during the regular season. So, did they get 10 hours every single day? It didn't happen, especially when they were traveling, and a couple of the scenarios where it was difficult because they're juggling being a regular student athlete. But really, that was the goal over that 5 to 7 week period. And we did significantly increase that total duration to try and, like I said, bring down that accumulated debt that we often, kind of accumulate as we chronically don't get enough sleep. So that was really one of the first ones that we thought was quite fascinating to see the physical manifestation of trying to optimize sleep over multiple weeks, and kind of have moved on from there and looking at other sports and different durations. One of my most, the latest one was we were looking this at sleep extension, what we're terming more like sleep loading. So a shorter period of even just 5 days with professional baseball players, and looking at how does that potentially impact, say, response time or a cognitive processing speed, since we know those are critical to how an athlete will perform on the field. And have started to see some preliminary findings that suggest that even a shorter duration of sleep extension, or what we're terming as sleep loading, may provide some benefit as well.
Oh, Sherry Ma, I'm telling you, I really dig the idea of sleep loading. I totally get it, and I absolutely love it. Now, imagine this type of a strategy for an event sort of oriented athlete, somebody maybe like a tennis player going into the U.S. Open, or we have the Olympics coming up this offseason, or you know, take right now, the NHL is right now, and I want to get to this a bit later, but the NHL now has their opening games in China. I mean, that's a, boy, oh boy, that's an interesting thing. So let's get to that sleep loading. I really like the idea of this, Sherry. So we're talking about maybe you're looking at a major event. I mean, I would suggest that perhaps maybe a musician could use this type of an approach for a major performance, or a student may use this type of a strategy leading up to exams, because this goes well beyond sport.
Exactly. And that's really how we initially constructed it, where we were saying, okay, if you have a major event, regardless if, yes, potentially you're an elite athlete, that's who we're studying it in. But exactly, it could potentially translate to other high performing industries or jobs, where if you have, you know, say a couple of days or a week leading up into the event, what can we do to try and maximize your performance? We chose 5 days in the idea that it would be less than a week. If you had an event, say on Saturday, then what could you do Monday to Friday? Or in the context of baseball, you know, you're a pitcher, what can you do 5 days before you're going to pitch next, right? And we really liked trying to look at a more practical, shorter term intervention that we thought may still provide some benefit. So that was sort of our hypothesis. And then we started to tackle specific cognitive processes that we thought were going to be critical for these elite athletes.
Oh, Sherry, listen.
And so when you think about it, yeah, I'm going to throw it in there too. When you think about kind of sleep loading, it kind of came from this idea of, like, you know, carb loading prior to an event, right? And so we were trying to think about sleep as a possible short-term intervention too, that yes, chronically, that is probably foundationally most important, that should be prioritized, mm-hmm. whether you're an elite athlete or even a working professional. But in the interim before that important event, maybe there are some shorter term interventions that could be quite beneficial. But to be determined, we're still working on this, but we do think that there's some preliminary data that suggests that there could be some benefits to sleep loading.
Yeah, I think we can make some pretty good predictions of how this is going to turn out. I think it's going to be fantastic. Hey, Sherry, when you talked about your sleep loading protocols, were there a set number of hours, or did you guys look at percentages over the course of the day? But if we looked at that 5-day program, what was sort of the protocols you guys were looking at?
So with the sleep loading, we were trying to have a set sleep and wake schedule that is very important for the body clock. We were really trying to have athletes also extend their sleep by going to bed earlier. We were keeping the wake up time the same for a number of reasons. It's better to kind of keep that wake time locked in. And it seems to be a little bit easier for athletes to extend their sleep by going to bed a little bit earlier. We were aiming to get also to extend sleep by a couple of hours. This was done during a training camp, so also a little bit difficult from the scheduling perspective, mm-hmm. but we were able to get athletes to extend their sleep by about an hour. And so it wasn't like 3 hours more than they were typically getting, but it suggests that even a shorter amount of an additional hour over the course of those 5 days could potentially provide some benefit.
No, it certainly makes sense. We're talking with Sherry Ma. Sherry's a clinical and transitional research fellow at the University of California in San Francisco. Sherry's worked with professional teams like the Golden State Warriors, the San Jose Sharks, Pittsburgh Steelers, teams like the Toronto Blue Jays, and it goes on and on. She's currently the sleep expertise on the Nike Performance Council. Sherry, let's go back to the conversation of sleep debt. I'm telling you, I have it. I think just about everybody I know has it. Hey, listen. I guess there's maybe mixed reviews on sleep debt. Can we actually pay it back? What's sort of the mindset right now in terms of sleep science in the sleep science world?
Mm-hmm. I am an advocate that we can pay this back. That's what most of my research has tried to focus on, and trying to demonstrate that there is an ability to pay back some of this debt that we accumulate. So maybe I'll take a step back. So our bodies require a certain amount of sleep every night, and there is variability. So, you know, I feel pretty terrible on 7 hours of sleep. I feel a lot more rejuvenated and refreshed on 8 to 9 hours. So there is going to be individual differences, but the very minimum that is the current recommendation for every healthy adult is 7 hours to prevent health risks and performance decrements. Again, I mentioned previously, elite athletes were really more recommending the range of 8 to 10 hours, 10 plus in there. just because potentially the need for additional recovery time. But now when you don't meet your what we call individual sleep requirement each day, then it builds up like a debt. And that accumulates over time. And so you're right. Most of us do walk around with a sizable sleep debt and don't recognize that that is what can affect things like your reaction time, your cognition, your learning and memory. This is what can affect immune function and your mood and physiology and your appetite. And the list unfortunately goes on. But once we have this accumulated sleep debt, we do suspect that we can pay this back, but it takes more than just one night or one weekend to make a significant dent. And unfortunately, a lot of us really don't allow us the opportunity over multiple days, multiple weeks, to be able to really reduce down that sleep debt. Sometimes just take that one Saturday to sleep in, and unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be sufficient.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I'm part of that too. You know, I do my best for sure. Hey, Sherry, what are the role of naps when we talk about repaying that sleep debt, or just, you know, getting that recommended amount of sleep?
Mm-hmm. No, naps can be great. I view naps as this additional boost in your day, that it shouldn't be there to replace adequate sleep at night, because the goal really should be consolidated sleep through the whole night. And then really naps just as this additional boost. And for a lot of my athletes, I'm really only recommending them take about a 20 to 30 minute power nap in the afternoon if needed, to give you a little bit of a boost in alertness and performance temporarily. Say, for example, like a pregame nap, we'll time that appropriately so that it'll be right before they have to go out onto the field. It'll give them a little bit more. But naps really are not supposed to replace that 8 hours, 9 hours at nighttime. I mean, if anything, sometimes naps can have a negative effect, especially if athletes, I'm sure you've seen it very well, hour, 2 hour, 3 hour power naps. They're not even power naps. That's like long naps in the afternoon. Those can be detrimental to sleep at nighttime. So it's a fine balance, but, you just want to strategize appropriately so that you're still getting the foundational sleep that you need at night.
Sherry, I really like that. I like the idea of just making sure you're getting enough sleep over a period of time. That way, you know, if you miss a night of sleep, or you get home late, or you just, for whatever reason, don't get a restful sleep one night, you don't have to panic. You can make it up over time. You might be tired for a day, but you can get it under control if you have a strategy for that. Great, great advice. Hey, listen, everybody, we have to cut out for a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation on the crush, number one performance factor, sleep. And we're going to talk to Sherry about how she beat the NBA and predicted with incredible accuracy which teams were going to lose. Sleep science at its finest, right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. I am Jeff Kershaw. The Con Man is here, and we're your weekly source for performance information. The website is crushperformance.com, and on Facebook, Crush Performance. You can go there and get our free ebook that's available right now. It is called The Key to Performance. It's an ebook on sleep and the power of sleep if you're trying to maximize your performance. Listen, for our athletes, sleep is king, and I think it should be for you as well. Trust me, if you want to get that little extra edge and you want to maximize your performance, you have to understand and implement the strategies for better sleep. And it's all in our handbook that's available on our Facebook page, crushperformance.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And today we are joined by one of the world's leading minds when it comes to sleep science, Sherry Ma. Sherry Ma is a clinical and transitional research fellow at the University of California in San Francisco at the Human Performance Center and School of Medicine there. And you can follow Sherry on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Sherry_Ma. And if you have any questions for Sherry, you can reach her at sherrymaugh@stanfordalumni.org. Sherry, thanks for hanging on over the break. Listen, a great conversation so far. There's so much more to get to. And I want to start here because this is something that's near and dear to my heart because we have some really solid science and research that points to the implications of technology and how technology is impacting our sleep. For our athletes, for our pro and national caliber athletes, this is a big, big issue. And we have very, very strict protocols when it comes to getting ready for sleep and sleep time strategies and shutting down technologies. In your science and in your research and in your experience, Sherry, what is your view on the implications of technology in sleep and where are we at in terms of understanding really what it's all about?
It's tricky. I think we're very much a, you know, technology society now that most of us are plugged into our laptops, computers, TVs, et cetera, for a lot of the day. And it's true. Unfortunately, the technology, particularly the bright light exposure, so the blue frequencies of light that are emitted from these devices, when we expose ourselves to that prior to sleeping, particularly that hour before you're trying to sleep, that can negatively impact sleep. So it can prevent you from going to sleep when you want to. Unfortunately, it actually decreases when melatonin is released, and that's important for sleep. And so the more that we're engaged with our technology right before bed, unfortunately, that can have negative consequences on that quality of sleep and adequate sleep that we need every night. So one of the things that I very much recommend to all my athletes, as difficult as it can be, is really trying to make sure that prior to sleep, one, they have a wind down routine. So at least about 30 minutes of a relaxing routine that they do every single day to actually prepare them to sleep. And as part of that, making sure they also have time to power down their technology, that they take care of that before they're going to start into this process as they prepare to sleep. To try and build in some of these triggers so that they're not having that exposure right before they're going to bed.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense. And we know it makes a difference. I've seen athletes that have actually disciplined themselves enough to make those adjustments. And the feedback from the athletes is overwhelmingly positive. So I think that's a real, real strong shot across the bow for everybody who's trying to improve their performance. You got to control the technology, especially, as you mentioned, when you get into that preparation for sleep time. It's really important part of, I think, the daily routine.
It is. And I know it's incredibly difficult, but I think if you're disciplined with it, like you said, it can make a significant difference. And whether that's, I've had some athletes, you know, power down all their technology in another room. That's probably the ideal. Some, you know, even leave their phones in the bathroom because they know that they will not walk over there to get to their tech. There's very creative solutions that I've seen with my athletes, but you know, those are all good steps in the right direction to try and figure out what will work for them so that they don't have that bright light exposure because they recognize that it is detrimental to how they're going to sleep at night.
Sherry, another big issue that athletes face is the time zones, especially the pro, even collegiate athletes, certainly our international Olympic athletes. Boy, oh boy, this is a mountain to overcome when we talk about managing sleep. If we look at the number of time zones, an NFL team, an NBA team, a Major League Baseball team will cross over the course of their seasons. This is absolutely inhuman almost. Wouldn't you agree? What a crazy conundrum we've created in terms of our scheduling in professional and international sports.
It is. It's tricky. We recognize that circadian disruption, which happens when you cross over multiple time zones, potentially could affect performance outcomes. We've seen that when we've looked at NFL game outcomes over, you know, there was one study that looked over 25 years and then we increased it to 40 years, looking at the difference between, for example, East versus West matchups and it's particularly in night games and the impact of that body clock can significantly impact the game outcomes. And we recognize that sometimes teams don't have sufficient time to fully adapt to the new time zone because the rule of thumb is that for every time zone you cross, it will take one day to acclimate. So if you go over East Coast to West Coast, about three time zones, it'll take about 3 days to acclimate. It's a little bit of an oversimplification, but it's a good rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. And so we know that that's also a factor that needs to be hopefully strategized by teams to try and make sure that that's something they're taking into account when they're making their travel schedules.
Well, for an NFL team, I can see them being able to manage that if they're going coast to coast or within their division at least, but when we get to the playoffs. But for sports like Major League Baseball and the NBA and the NHL, where these guys are playing, you know, multiple games per week, what a strategic opportunity this is for a team to get ahead if they really start focusing on managing and trying to get quality sleep based on time zones and travel. This is a big opportunity in a lot of ways if you understand how it all works, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's there's different challenges in the different leagues, right? At least in Major League Baseball, you stay in one city for a three-game series, and so you have a little bit more of an opportunity potentially to acclimate to that or plan and strategize around what location you're going to or coming from. With the NBA, there has been some changes in the schedule this coming season, and we'll see how that plays out, but it's a little bit more difficult when they often are traveling city to city a little bit more frequently, right? And one thing that we did last year, I'm not sure if you saw it, but the ESPN NBA schedule alert project was something that we tried to bring together different factors about that schedule, factoring in those time zone changes, as well as game density and travel and sleep and recovery opportunities, regardless of strength of team, and potentially predict when teams would potentially lose just based on these scheduling factors. And in the end, it was pretty spot on from what the predictions were from the prior season, about 76%. For the worst of the worst games, that was like 13 for 17 games. And then 69% were correctly predicted as losses for 29 of the 42 overall games. And again, there's been improvements, but I think that there's still a lot of opportunity to make these schedules even better. And then for teams to figure out how to make some adjustments, so they'll be playing their best, even regardless of some of the travel involved.
Okay, so Sherry Ma, I don't want to alert you or your family or worry anybody, but if I were to kidnap you for a weekend and take you to Vegas, we could do very, very well. Sherry, let me tell you, hey, those numbers are crazy. So you developed the model, and these are actually referred to as the Ma scores now, and I wonder if this didn't, and no, there's no doubt in my mind that it did influence the NBA's move to change the schedule, but I wonder if there was pressure from Vegas, for crying out loud, because let's face it, those numbers are crazy. You developed the model based on team travel that would predict whether a team had an advantage or a massive disadvantage going into a game. And you had a 76% accuracy rate for picking a team that would lose based on really bad conditions. That is absolutely incredible. But it also, I guess, Sherry, goes to show the power of sleep and why it's such a top priority when we're trying to master human performance.
Right. And we were trying to highlight with this that there's a number of factors, right? And we were trying to pull them together to at least highlight that there's some scenarios that potentially would be worse from a traveling, from recovery, and from a scheduling standpoint. If it had some impact, a small push to try and make this better, then I would take that as a win, really, to try and recognize that, hey, these athletes really need to have adequate recovery opportunities to be able to play at their best. And sometimes that wasn't going to happen in a few of these scenarios. So that's what we were really trying to identify. It was a fun project and hopefully just brings more awareness to the lead athletes, but then for all of us too, that we recognize we need to have foundational sleep every day.
Yeah, great. So for everybody who knows Sherry, if she disappears for a weekend, do not worry. She'll be in some presidential suite at some grand hotel in Vegas, and we're just going to be testing the formula. How does that sound, Sherry?
You let me know when we're going.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. Well, listen, Sherry, right now, based on everything we know about sleep, what's next for us? What's next for us in the world of high performance and sleep science? Is there anything that you would like to see right now in terms of maybe where development athletes are coming from or what we need to do for our pros?
Oh, good question. I think from my perspective, from the research side, I think that there's still a lot that we don't, that we're still trying to understand about sleep interventions and how we can better integrate strategies for circadian disruption, with inadequate recovery opportunities, with training load. I think that's sort of the next frontier, if I might say. I think we've looked at some of the descriptive studies around sleep quality and duration in athletes. And I think our next step is really trying to identify better interventions to try and improve this particular area for elite athletes. From an application standpoint, I think we're at a very unique place as technology and different consumer devices, different research devices are allowing us to kind of peel back the curtain a little bit more on sleep with these elite athletes and better be able to look at objective information around how these athletes are recovering and integrating that with other recovery and monitoring modalities. And I think that it's only going to continue to grow. And I've seen that in the last 5 years. That partnered with, I think, the opportunity to build more around the recovery and sleep interventions, I think that's sort of the next step. And that needs to happen, in my eyes, not just at the top of the pyramid with our elite pro athletes. I think that's something that we need to integrate at every level, starting when athletes are much younger, because again, it's not just the elite athletes that need proper recovery and sleep. We all do. and that needs to start at an earlier age, so that by the time they progress through these different levels, hopefully it's something that has been well ingrained since an early age.
Sherry, you know, you're so right. And I think, you know, if you look at the younger levels, even our high school or younger grade school athletes and our collegiate athletes, they have so much more going on in their lives. The pro athletes live, eat, and breathe their sport. These younger athletes, they have classes to attend to. They may have part-time jobs. They may be playing multiple sports. So it's a really fine balance, Sherry. Hey, one last question for you, and I think it's really important. I had it in my notepad here. I can't even begin to imagine the impact on injury and injury prevention, which is, of course, one of our top priorities in terms of sport at every single level. Do you have any sort of data or idea of the impact that proper sleep has on injury prevention? Because I'm going to strongly suggest it's a massive number.
Yes. So there's been a couple of studies, not on many studies that have particularly tied sleep with injury risk. There is this thought that, yes, inadequate sleep or poor sleep quality may potentially lend itself to higher injury risk. But the couple that are out there, there's one that was specifically in adolescent athletes that showed athletes that were getting less than 8 hours of sleep had a 1.7 higher increased risk for injury than athletes that were getting 8 or more hours of sleep.
And that's a big number.
That was one of them.
Yeah.
And that, right. That's huge,
yeah,
right?
And then the other one
I was going to throw out there too was, when you look at now the pro level, there was a study more recently on the 2012 to 2015 season. So over those three seasons. And one stat that really stuck out to me is that they showed there's a threefold increase in injury risk in back-to-back games, particularly if they're playing 3 to 4 games versus 1 to 2 games in the past 5 days. So suggesting that the game density and potentially inadequate recovery between these games may increase injury risk. And I thought that was a very interesting study, and obviously the elite level and more recent data in the last couple of seasons. I think there's still more that we need to dive into in this realm, but very much I think athletes and teams are more cognizant of the potential contributing factor of improper sleep to injury. So I think they're trying to make some changes to improve and reduce the number of injuries to their athletes.
Oh, no, fantastic stuff. And that all goes back to the conversation of pure hardcore athlete management. Sherry Ma, listen, just a fantastic conversation today. I was looking forward to this for so long, and I'm not going to lie to you, this truly, truly exceeded every expectation I have. Thank you so much for your time today.
No, thank you so much for having me on.
Well, there you go, everybody. Miss Sherry Ma. You can follow Sherry on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Sherry_Ma. And if you have any questions for Sherry, you can reach her at SherryMa@StanfordAlumni.org. Such a great conversation, and very, very worthy of what is our number one performance priority. That is sleep. I'm telling you right now, the NBA has changed their schedule in large part due to the sleep science and the rest and recovery for their athletes. There's also new ruling that just came out this week Right alongside the Board of Governors approving changes to the draft lottery system, they also agreed on a policy for resting healthy players, and it will be effective with the 2017-2018 season. The rules are online, but it's very interesting to see a pro organization going to such lengths for the first time that we've ever seen to protect and rest players. Inside of this resting policy, however, there are clauses that dictate when and how they can rest star players. And in relationship to television and television revenue, of course, driving a lot of the decisions here, in correlation to when these teams will be televised. So if you're looking to go to an NBA game and you want to see your stars, make sure it's a televised game. Because if it's not a televised game, there's a chance the big boys might be sitting on the bench. That being said, another clause also mentions that if the star players are not in the lineup, they have to be very, very visible on the bench, which is an interesting move. And that's just all marketing, and rightfully so. You pay good money to go to a game to see your star players. You should be able to at least see them. They do need rest, though, so I'm really, really all for this big move as the NBA Board of Governors moves the game forward in the name of safety. Well, listen, we certainly have to thank Sherry Ma today. That was a fantastic discussion. If you want to go back and get the podcast, go to crushperformance.com. Listen, we're on iTunes, Apple Podcast. We're on Google Play, Stitcher. You can get us on SoundCloud. We're everywhere you could possibly get it. You can subscribe. And also, if you want to get our free ebook that's available right now, go to our Facebook page, Crush Performance. Sign up and get that ebook. It's all about sleep. It's called The Key to Performance. Sleep is our number one factor when it comes to our athletes' performance, and for good reason. You can find out why and what you can do to improve your performance. Just sign up and get that ebook. I put it together for you guys, so let me know what you think. And coming up next week, we will have a crush preview of the NHL season. We're going to look at the teams, the players, and the storylines that you should be keeping your eye on this season. And we're also going to visit with the Blue Jays performance team as the baseball players head into the offseason. What should you be thinking about? We're going to talk to the guys from the Blue Jays about off-season baseball. Looking forward to that one for sure. And in the weeks to come, the Crush War on Sugar will continue as energy drinks and sport drinks come under fire. And there's some new research, that's just come out that points at the devastating damage of high glycemic diets. We're going to get on that because that's a very, very important conversation. And later in October, we will visit with our good friend Jim Fannin, the coach of champions. He has a new book coming out, Blueprint. It's available on Amazon right now, so you can go pre-order it. But we're going to talk to Jim about his blueprint for success and how you guys can start mapping out your plan to reach your potential. I want to thank, again, Sherry Ma for coming on today. Fantastic show. Con Man, thank you for everything. And I want to thank all of our audience for listening today. Hey, please pass this show on. This one's important. And I wish you all the best when it comes to your sleep strategies. And we'll talk to you next time on Crush Performance.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Something that is topical, and I don't want to get into the a lot of details of the specifics of the whole college basketball scandal, but I want to at least touch on how it could have an effect and where this might affect the future of college football. Is college basketball recruiting is different than college football recruiting, but there's certain elements that I think are transferable and potentially harmful as we go down the road of this path. But I want to, as it particularly pertains to the big news of the day, yesterday with the firing of longtime athletic director Tom Jurich at Louisville and Rick Pitino, the basketball coach. Now, these are two guys that would not rank very high on the character list of individuals that, while they've had success at points and times in their careers, certainly in Tom Jurich's case has been an enabler. This is one of a long line of many issues that Rick Pitino's had off the field, scandals, not just minor things either, scandals. He would have never survived any of those had it not been for his success on the court as a basketball coach. But, you know, what does it really mean for Louisville and Bob Petrino, the football coach there? Remember that this was another character flawed guy that Tom Jurich hired, not once but twice at Louisville. Bob is mostly known for walking out on the Falcons and getting into a motorcycle accident and lying to his superiors at Arkansas about having an affair with a volleyball player slash, you know, young office assistant that he hired. And he was known for those two things. But he's also known for a guy that is kind of underhanded in a lot of his dealings in the coaching profession. He's a guy that's got a huge, huge closet that's full of skeletons. And really, no one knew that more than Tom Jurich, but hired him a second time. But now he's gone. A couple of things factually that you need to know. The buyout of, you know, if he were to leave, goes down by half if Tom Jurich is fired. Well, we know that the process of Tom Jurich's firing is undergoing right now. You know, for people who may be wondering, why didn't they just fire Patino and Jurich? Why do they go with the monkeying around of the suspensions and unpaid leave? Well, there are legal renderings here, and there's money being owed. In the case of Rick Pitino and his lawyer, he wants $44 million on top of, you know, the embarrassment of what he's done to himself, the sport, the university. He wants to be paid the $44 million. While that's unmitigated gall to the nth degree, this is what Louisville is legally fighting right now. So all the legal maneuverings of, you know, unpaid leave, they're gone. Tom Jurich and Rick Pitino, they're gone, and they won't resurface at Louisville, and maybe not anywhere. But what does it mean for Petrino? Well, it means that he can leave. Does he want to leave? I don't think there's any doubt that he's not going to be comfortable being at Louisville with a new administration that's going to have to clean things up. And I don't think he's going to fit the profile of a clean guy that that they want leading their program into the future.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.